Ground Cover News is a nonprofit street paper that was founded in April 2010 as a means to empower low-income persons to make the transitions from homeless to housed and from jobless to employed. Vendors purchase each copy of the Ground Cover News regular edition at our office for 50 cents. This money goes towards production costs. Vendors work selling the paper on the street for $2, keeping all income and tips from each sale. This audio production was made possible by the Ann Arbor District Library, recorded at Fifth Avenue Studios. If you consistently enjoy Ground Cover Speaks, continuing to buy physical newspapers from Ground Cover vendors ensures that we can sustain production. The physical paper and in-person interaction is at the heart of our work. You can find the link to our next audio recording in the upcoming print issue of Ground Cover News. Thanks for listening.
Special thanks to our print advertisers, the People's Food Co-op, St. Francis of Assisi Parish, First Baptist Church, Bethlehem United Church of Christ, the Office of Community and Economic Development, Cineholic, Art on a Journey, Ann Arbor for Public Power, Four Directions, and the Ypsilanti Food Co-op.
Keep the Torch Lit, written by Mike Jones, Vendor 113. The lines in the sand have been drawn in more ways than one. In this case, it's democracy versus autocracy, or should I say, a so-called democracy or a potential autocracy. Did you know 71% of the world's population is ruled or governed by an autocracy? That means if this democracy fails here in the United States of America and is turned into an autocracy, liberty's light of freedom on earth would be rendered dim. Millions of voters in America are not too thrilled about the two candidates we have to choose from. A large percentage of the voters consider themselves voting for a lesser evil, and it shouldn't have to be that way. When one casts his ballot, one wants to be in full support of his candidate's ideas and values. As we have it, neither candidate share the values I believe in. Nevertheless, through my struggles and whether or not to participate in the 2024 election, I decided to do my duty and cast my ballot because I still believe in the ideals of democracy. Voters like myself must seize this opportunity. I'm not voting for either candidate. I'm voting for my ideals of freedom and what I think this country should be and what it shouldn't be. I consider myself fortunate to have the opportunity to vote, and I encourage all that can to do the same. We voters can't be naive, no matter who wins the presidency. We will have a lot of work to do in order for liberty's bell to ring and to be heard throughout the world. But we must first keep liberty's torch lit from the shores of the Atlantic to the Pacific Ocean.
Trump and Harris housing policies by D.A., a Ground Cover News contributor. I interviewed someone for this article based on their views and outlook towards the Trump and Harris housing policies when it comes to low-income and middle-class United States citizens. This is a male who is in his 60s. Let's refer to him as Mr. Leon. First, Mr. Leon stated that he will be voting for Vice President Kamala Harris because she has proposed expanding the financing options for affordable housing and promoting the conversion of empty office space into apartments. Mr. Leon is a middle-class retiree who still works to supplement his income and utilizes affordable housing supports. He is grateful for the supportive programs. As far as he is concerned when it comes to former President Donald Trump, he says he refuses to trust in someone who has been named in lawsuits for fraud and other felonious activities. Mr. Leon trusts that Vice President Harris will do what is in the best interest of the low-income people and families of America. Affordable housing is essential to a lot of things. This allows us to have access to the basics that get us through the day and offers the necessary safe and habitable shelter for the rest and preparing meals. It is hard to obtain and maintain employment without these things. They go hand in hand. Mr. Leon recalls that former President Donald Trump has denied employment to poor people and has been discriminatory in his housing practices. He does not believe that Trump will do anything for low-income housing or for aiding new home buyers. He does not agree with how Trump is disrespectful and self-oriented. This isn't all about him. Here's an example of how housing policy has generationally affected Black Americans throughout the U.S. Democrats have worked to implement programs that provide mortgage assistance and financial support for Black contractors and home building companies. The Harris administration will pump billions of dollars into our communities. Trump's plans are to give trillions in tax breaks to real estate moguls and wealthy entities to build expensive, exclusive projects using public tax dollars to increase the wealth of billionaire class. The top 1% of the nation who already control 90% of the private wealth of the U.S. citizenry. Last but not least, Mr. Leon just hopes that whoever is elected won't result in the loss of more housing for low-income and middle-class population with growing rent rates and cost of home ownership. He wants to see America as Americans united for the good of the U.S. and not a divided country.
Freegan Vegan, local food justice activists help two causes at once. An article by Jim Clark, Vendor 139. In the front yard of Hospitality House on North Washington Street in Ypsilanti, there is a table, a rack, and a sign that says food only. On the table and rack is a constant cornucopia of donated foods ranging from fresh On the table and rack is a constant cornucopia of donated foods ranging from fresh produce to milk and eggs to boxed and canned foods. Recently, a group of local food justice activists began adding prepared vegan dishes to the fare found on Monday evenings. Some of the food is prepared by a person who goes by Shanky, who is a food justice activist and gardener. I asked Shanky how the vegan food distro got started. She said, some friends and fellow vegans met up at the library and threw around some ideas. Then we thought, let's drive around, find people on the street, let's just start making meals. That week, FedUp was closed. Someone asked if we could do a small distribution. So we came up with 50 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, Clif Bars, and juice boxes. FedUp Ministries serves meals to the street community in Ypsilanti. Shanky goes on, then we got permission to do it in front of Hospitality House. We put out flyers to the farmers market asking for leftover produce. A few other community members donated as well. We had a decent amount of produce to get out. We did some cooking and baking and threw it all together and then handed it out in mismatched containers. Shanky is an Ypsilanti local who has been on nonprofit boards and helps run several community gardens while teaching people how to grow. She began baking vegan and gluten-free items for her friends with food allergies. On again, off again vegan, she does eat eggs and uses them in her own baking. She also makes her own oat milk, but does not eat honey. Shanky explains, honeybees are an invasive non-native that kills other bees by dominating the food sources. Instead of honey, Shanky recommends, use maple syrup, it works just as well. Every Monday offers a chance to see different activists staffing the vegan food distro table. One person, who goes by Cinder, is also a food justice activist and vegan. Cinder said, I have been a vegan for 10 years now, and in that time I haven't done as much activism as I would have liked. I have mostly volunteered at events and worked to share my ideas one-on-one. I have always done volunteering in one way or another, so that aspect has been a part of my life since early childhood. I was keeping an eye out for local opportunities to help the disenfranchised members of our community without compromising my beliefs. I saw a call for volunteers on a local Facebook group and got in contact with the group from there. The group was the Vegan Food Distribution Team. Cinder went on to explain the program. The food distribution we are doing has a focus on offering a hot vegan meal each week. We also offer ready-to-eat options, produce, baked goods, and hygiene products as they become available. The whole program right now is being run by volunteers in a small pool of weekly donations. We are, of course, trying to expand that donation pool. Anyone who wants to reach out by donating food, drinks, or any other vegan products for distribution can reach out in person or via our Facebook page, Vegan Food Distro Ypsilanti. I asked Cinder what they thought of the relationship between food justice and housing rights. She answered, "On one level, offering a delicious hot meal of any kind is a step in the right direction. We need to make sure everyone knows where their next meal is coming from as a start. On the level of why vegan specifically, there are a few notes to consider. Firstly, most vegan food lasts longer without refrigeration than traditional options. Secondly, the meals lean heavily on vegetables. The health and food energy benefits to whole foods are undeniable. Regular consumption of whole foods is associated with fewer hospital stays, lower risk of cardiac disease, and a diminished number of overall health problems. Helping unhoused folks stay as healthy as possible means helping alleviate the potential of large medical expenses over time. We try to offer a variety of fresh produce every week to the same end. Lastly, the environmental, nutritional, and community benefits of veganism are truly impossible to ignore. We can help those in our community without adding to the existing issues associated with animal agriculture, so why wouldn't we? Whether homeless or struggling, everyone deserves to eat healthy, delicious food."
Tracy Bennett's Puzzle Journey, New York Times Wordle editor, bids farewell to Ground Cover News. Written by Allison Way, read by Michelle. You could say that Tracy Bennett was a born puzzle lover. Before she could even talk, at 17 months, Bennett was doing jigsaw puzzles, according to her mom. As a young girl, Bennett's appetite for puzzles couldn't be stopped. She did her older sister's jigsaw puzzles and then moved on to crossword puzzles. At 17, she did her first New York Times crossword at a friend's house and fell in love with it. But she couldn't afford to get a New York Times subscription. "Growing up, we were very poor, and I lived in a house with no running water and an outhouse," said Bennett. To feed her love for puzzles, Bennett asked neighbors and friends for their New York Times crosswords. Decades later, Bennett has gone from not being able to afford a New York Times subscription to being the New York Times' first and only Wordle editor. As an associate puzzle editor, Bennett always edits crosswords and strands. "It's my dream job," said Bennett. But for the longest time, puzzling was just a hobby. Never could she have imagined it would turn into a career. Originally from Maine, Bennett moved to Michigan to study English literature at the University of Michigan, joining her sister at U of M. She has been in Ann Arbor ever since. It was here, in one of America's most well-read cities, that Bennett discovered her love for words. "In my senior year, I became fascinated with how words worked," said Bennett. Postgrad, she considered a master's in linguistics or publishing. She ended up choosing the latter, working as a copy editor for the journal Mathematical Reviews. Here, she further honed her love for language. "I love editing. It was like working in two different languages. Technical math language is a language in and of itself, but I was also working with a lot of non-native English speakers." Working at Mathematical Reviews, Bennett was content. Life went on. She got married, had a son. She continued pursuing puzzles, but only on the side. In 2010, at the urging of a friend, she entered a local puzzle-solving contest and won. Afterward, she entered the American Crossword Tournament. "I didn't do as well as a competitor, but I met people who make puzzles for the first time. It was like a light turned on. I saw that people don't just solve puzzles, but make them. That sounded so wonderful to me." Bennett began learning how to construct puzzles under mentor Victor Fleming, who had his crosswords published in the New York Times and co-contributed crosswords to Ground Cover. In 2013, Bennett had her first crossword puzzled. In 2013, Bennett had her first crossword published in the New York Times. In 2014, she got her first job offer as a puzzle constructor at Bust Magazine. She started creating puzzles for crosswords with friends. All this came at a cost. I was still working my day job, raising a child, and doing dozens of puzzles on top of all this. I was getting up at 5 a.m. or going to bed late, exhausted, just to get everything done, said Bennett. Making puzzles is hard. It's very time-consuming to make a puzzle. It can take me 3 days to make a good one, said Bennett. Beyond skill, it wasn't easy breaking into the puzzle-making scene. The puzzle industry was primarily white male-dominated, said Bennett. When I first started, there were these 16, 20-year-old computer science major phenoms being celebrated. As a 40-year-old mom with a whole career, I wasn't really getting the same attention. That's part of why her puzzle career, inclusivity, has always been important to her. At Bust, Bennett created crosswords with feminist themes. In 2017, she co-founded The Incubator, a magazine that trains women and non-binary folks how to create crosswords and pays them for their work. I started to feel like I was really making puzzles for a living, and my day job was just paying the bills. In 2020, when the job for associate puzzle editor at the New York Times opened, I applied and got it, said Bennett. I was in my late 50s and made it a major career change. Bennett was hired at the same time as Wina Liu, who edits Connections. When I joined the Times, it was pretty much exclusively white male, but they were trying to expand that. Since she joined the New York Times, Bennett has continued focusing on inclusivity. One way she does this is through mentorship. She mentored 3 people through the New York Times Diversity Crossword Constructor Fellowship. When you think of inclusivity, you always think of race and gender, but there's also subtle ageism. It's hard to be treated like you're amazing when you're older and starting a new hobby. That's something I'm sensitive to since I started making puzzles in my 40s. One of my mentees was in her 70s. Bennett also keeps in mind inclusivity when choosing the Wordle word of the day. When you make a puzzle, who are you assuming is solving the puzzle? Who are you excluding when you say a word is obscure? I wanted to expand the narrative of who's solving the puzzle, to make more people feel seen and included in the story. It hasn't come without challenges. I got complaints when I ran the word manga, and people didn't know what it was. I got the same reaction for penne, like the pasta. People thought I was trying to trick them with some weird foreign word, but it's not foreign, it's English. So that's a barrier I'm constantly pushing against. Dealing with backlash is something Bennett has had to learn since joining the Times. When I first started, I decided to do a few themed words. I ran Feast for Thanksgiving. There was so much fervor over that word. Slate magazine ran an article titled, "The New Word Editor is Ruining Wordle." Slate magazine ran an article titled, "The New Wordle Editor is Ruining Wordle." The response to that, "It was a wake-up call," said Bennett, a self-described introvert who's most comfortable behind her computer. Despite the pressures of being in the limelight, it's worth it. Some of Bennett's favorite parts of being a Wordle editor are what she calls moments of magical synchronicity, when a word magically lines up in something happening in someone's life. I ran Carol one day. A woman wrote to me saying that day was her mother's memorial service and her mom's name was Carol, and she was a lifelong Wordle lover. A lot of intentionality goes behind choosing the 5-letter Wordle. Created by James Wardle in 2020, Wordle has a set bank of 2,400 5-letter words. I set a random generator from 1 to 2,400. If we haven't run that word already, I set that word up for the week. I do this until I have 7 picks and then order them in the order I think flows best. Before moving forward, Bennett researches each word. I look up the meaning in the dictionary and research the word's secondary and tertiary meanings to make sure I'm not offending anyone. Bennett is also careful about context. If there's something in the news like October 7th, I try to choose a bland word. We try to be sensitive about what we're putting out there. The words go to a dedicated team of puzzle solvers for testing before finally being approved. Bennett brings that same passion to her work at GroundCover. Since 2019, Bennett has made some of GroundCover's crosswords after being referred by Peter Collins, a fellow Ann Arborite who published 120-plus crosswords in the New York Times and many in GroundCover News as well. 5 years of the puzzle making for GroundCover behind her, Bennett is now bidding farewell. I have too many projects going on outside of my day job, but I will still probably submit some when I have time. It's really cool volunteering with GroundCover. I love being downtown and seeing someone selling GroundCover. I'll always buy it and eagerly look at the back to see the puzzle. At the end of the day, Bennett says her mission is to create joy. Puzzles are little problems you can solve rather than problems you can't solve. Nobody making puzzles wants to trick you. They want you to solve it. In an increasingly complex world where it's easy to feel overwhelmed, these small wins matter. Bringing joy and meaning to other people's lives, that is what puzzles are all about.
Look, look, my heart is an open book. Musings on land and healing. Ken Parks, GroundCover vendor number 490. That song spills out of my mouth occasionally. If you look, you may see a heart of scars that is still healing. The stages of the path may require an even deeper healing, an even deeper level of healing. Some crisis may reveal an underlying condition that is a big mystery. Spiritual friends may become the key to the clues you need. When my ophthalmologist told me that I have vascular endothelial growth factor, my mind went on full alert. When it shows up in the eyes, it can cause what is called age-related macular degeneration. Matt Hustal, who I know from Pizza in the Park, told me they call it VEGF in his biology research lab. It appears to form in the gut microbiome, which Matt is studying. I am an eternal student and have discovered that some wounds and pathologies have a collective dynamic that must be addressed. The gut microbiome is a community of up to 100 trillion organisms that live in the intestinal tract. There are 37 trillion cells in our body, so we have an even larger, very diverse community in our gut. Digestion, energy creation, and the immune system are all expressions of the gut microbiome. If you have a gut feeling, it's from your second brain, so to speak. The vagus nerve connects the two brains. This is a field of study that we need to honor. We live in a community of modern humans. Dr. Carl Jung and his adventures with and beyond Sigmund Freud have much to offer to intellectual workers who are trying to finish the job. Intellectual work that focuses on how to make sense of the mess we are in is very important. The difference between truth and fiction is that fiction must make sense. Homo sapiens sapiens is a subspecies of Homo sapiens, and the Latin word for wise is repeated twice to specify that modern humans are the only survivors of the species. Some of us may have Neanderthal genes, but there are no remaining Neanderthal people. Neander is the name of the valley in Germany where remains were found. They evolved from Homo sapiens and populated the Eurasian landmass until some 40,000 years ago. So when you look in the mirror, who do you see? as you mature, you will discover many times that you are not who you think you are. One thing is certain, we are sentient beings who are children of this earth. Water, air, and sun have also brought us forth. We share Turtle Island with many relations, both plant and animal. My interdisciplinary studies are beyond my ability to fully master anything, so my eternal student is sometimes the village idiot. As Homo sapiens sapiens, we learn to think at a young age. Rebirthers have discovered that we make deep decisions at the time of birth. We must be deciders before we are thinkers. Are you happy to be here or not? You may cry with your first breath. As you see, our community life is the context for our individual experience. You live your own life, but you don't do it alone. An understanding of natural law goes beyond the law of gravity. Quantum mechanics and probabilities are the new paradigm. Making friends with our own mind is the essential task before us, in my humble opinion. As children of the earth, we will discover the sacred nature of earth and realize that all earthly beings have a place here. So how could we have homelessness and underhoused populations? It's time to examine social norms and create new ones in some cases. You can take a breath for a fresh start. Other times, let the breath rest and observe the mind until you find a fresh mind. Kempo Chipel from the Karuna Buddha Center is a good teacher at this point. Many are those who want a more awakened mind. We can enter the Olympics of mind training in which everybody wins. Honor all who have some realization and are happy to share it. Private property is the main belief of what we once called middle class life. This belief is basic to the compliance culture which arose from the collapse of feudalism. The Renaissance and the Age of Enlightenment evolved into the capitalism we know today. We are deeply entrenched in the belief that you must be a property owner to be a real human being. Therefore, children must be trained to think they do not fully count as humans unless they accept the values of the ruling class ideology. Maybe that's why NASA discovered that most five-year-olds are creative genius level, and that declines as they are socialized into compliance culture. Let's practice open awareness and imagine how we can use property so as to have a better relation with all the people. Ann Arbor has an ordinance on accessory dwelling units. Jim Clark is helping me understand this ordinance. I believe it opens the door to build tiny homes in backyards and side lots that would be a simple living space. I'm looking for those who have used this ordinance and also those who are willing to explore the possibility. My vision is a small greenhouse, maybe 20 feet by 14 feet, with a living space behind the plants. I have experience camping out in my house to beat foreclosure in Detroit, sustainable camping at Standing Rock, and also base camp community on Carrizo Comecrudo land in Texas. I'm ready to begin a discussion on accessory dwelling units and see if we can do a workable model of shared and simple living. We have a design challenge that could be fun as we design a simple house and then clarify the responsibilities of mutual respect and shared living. I propose we start with a council fire. A shared fire touches on our shared indigenous heritage and focus awareness on body and earth on the land available. This process will be complete as land is returned to its indigenous caretakers who have an organic connection to the traditions of the first humans on this land. We can begin with the intention to design and build artistic accessory dwelling units until everyone has a safe place to sleep. Some may resemble a small bunkhouse or hostel for travelers. You can do a lot in a small space, as nomadic peoples have demonstrated for countless centuries. Look around until you find indigenous connections. The Native American Student Association is important if you have U of M relations. They are part of the Tahrir Coalition, well known for the camp on the Diag that was in solidarity with the Palestinian people, who also merit our attention. Practice open awareness that creates the vision that Che referred to in his famous quote, "We are realists, we dream the impossible." The first challenge is the permit and inspection process of the dwelling. I propose that permaculture design be brought into the ordinance. It looks like an obvious step, but also may be out of sync with compliance culture. Peter Bain was once editor of the Permaculture Activists, which was based in North Carolina. He now has a permaculture project in southwestern Michigan, which we could visit. A central research issue is composting toilets. Simple, sustainable living, it is probable that permaculture has a better design than the current waste disposal systems that regularly overflow with rainwater. Beaches are sometimes closed due to this inadequate design. Ann Arbor could be the vanguard by adopting compost as a basic tool for waste management. This approach would be a boon for a variety of ADUs and promote better use of the land. All this would best be done in consultation with indigenous traditions. We may develop a more complete form of land conservancy that focuses more on drainage basins than property lines that were created by settler communities, were caught in the land speculation of the 19th century. Homesteading was a source of government income. The Northwest Ordinance laid out the process for populating territories so they could become states. The number of broken treaties and the current crisis of property speculation and the poorly managed 2008 economic collapse, in which billions were given to bankrupt billionaires by foreclosing on the people. We know from the work of Richard Werner that loans create money out of nothing. Interest is fraud, and we need council fire with indigenous people to go back to the basics for a fresh start on the social commons. that is Mother Earth, Mother Nature. Lee Sprague is important here. His presentation at the 50th anniversary of the teaching at U of M and his presentation to the Native American Student Association and School for Environmental and Sustainability conference just before COVID is precious history that I hope we can revisit. We need to focus on the next steps that came out of these two events and his presentations. He began with this quote. It is the essence of his presentation. We have seen the French, the British, and now the Americans. We will still be here when you are gone.